Part 22, Chapter 2. Johnny had gone on his trip to look at bases, but he found himself looking at people. The flight had been pleasant enough. A new pilot had thought he would be flying Johnny, but the very idea of having to be flown about amused him. He didn't have a broken arm. But an escort of three Mark 32 battle planes, long-range ones that also were designed to carry a squad of Cyclo Marines or employees, got into the air behind him when he took off and stayed right with him. He had flown northeast over Africa, the Red Sea, and the Middle East, and into Russia, making good time 200,000 feet up, and looking for a pattern of lakes and rivers Colonel Ivan had showed him with a finger in sand. He had expected to find snow, but although it was late autumn, the only snow was on towering peaks below and to the east. He found his landmarks, found his pre-planned landing space, and found himself in the middle of a sea of surging people. Colonel Ivan was holding them back with a dozen mounted lancers so that he had a place to land. There must be 500 people in that throng. He opened the door and was blasted with sound. They were cheering themselves hoarse. He couldn't even understand what they were saying. Such were the rolling waves of sound. He couldn't really distinguish individual faces among so many. Colonel Ivan dismounted as Johnny got down from the plane. The colonel was a little stiff and too formal, thinking possibly Johnny blamed him because of Biddy. The colonel was wearing a black band around his sleeve. But Johnny threw an arm around his shoulders, and it was abruptly all right. They had brought him a horse, a golden-colored stallion with a sheepskin saddle, and he swung up. The crowd cheered. He only knew one word of Russian, and that was «Zudrasitya Voitya», which meant «How do you do? Hello». So he called it loudly, and the crowd cheered. Johnny looked around. They were close to, in fact right up against, the mountains. Fairly high mountains. 14,000 feet. They had snow on them. The ancient Russian base must be nearby. He had thought they would go right to it, and he could get his observation and estimation done right away. But no, everybody seemed to have other ideas. There were some skin and felt tents, and fires put their smoke in the air, and suddenly Johnny realized this crowd was in their best clothes. This was a holiday. And the way they pressed in upon him, he certainly was the reason. He wondered fleetingly whether Thor had been up here, for if he had, then a lot of these people would think he knew them. Well, his one word of Russian would have to get him by. The colonel's horsemen were opening the way. Every time Johnny raised his hand and nodded, there was a new ear-bashing burst of cheering. Colors, faces. He knew the sound of Russian well enough to know it was Russian, but he was also hearing scattered words like
Bravo!
And
Bueno!
And
Viva!
Sounded like the Llaneros. Yes. There was a flat crown, black leather hat, several of them, and some huge straw hats. The smell of roasting meat and the tang of dung fires was in the air. A band made up of balalaikas and Spanish guitars and Andean flutes and Mongol drums was splitting the air. The colonel got into a skin tent that had been set up for him, and with a final wave of the hand and his one word of Russian, now no longer adequate, he got inside. A coordinator had also come in, and through him, Johnny wanted to know, couldn't they go to the base now? The colonel was aghast. Yet, there was time for all that. One had to think of the people. Many of them, in fact most of them, had never met Johnny before, had never even seen him. Johnny said he was thinking of the people, to get them safe from possible harm. Well, harm was always around, according to the colonel, but not every day was an opportunity to meet Johnny. Verna? Right? At that, Johnny was glad to get out of his heavy flight suit, for it was much less cold here than he had thought. The colonel had brought his kit in, but he ignored it. He had a near-white buckskin suit he had made, not quite like the one on the credit banknote. Those loops there on each side of the breast were cartridge loops, but the village girls had done very well. Those moccasins should fit, but here were some military boots and red baggy pants, if he preferred. This gold helmet? Well, it wasn't really gold. It was a lightweight Russian helmet, armor-proof aluminum, no less, and somebody flying through here had taken it down to the old mine site at Grozny and plated it with beryllium, see? It didn't have any star or ornament on it, but this chin strap with the heavy ear pads and the colored beads all over it had been done by one of the Siberian tribes, and wasn't it nice? And besides, Dr. McKendrick had told Johnny to be careful of his head after the fractures, so wear it. Johnny said he couldn't hear with it buckled. Wear it! Johnny washed his face and got dressed and told the colonel he was a bully, and the colonel confessed he was far worse than that. It was this way. His original plan to have Americans man this base had been passed by the old council before it went funny. They'd recruited some South Americans and sent them over. But there was a tribe up in the Arctic descended from political prisoners in Siberia, and they spent most of their time starving to death. So they had come down en masse, dogs and all, and they were here. The Siberians were the ones out there in white bear skins. And then there was a little tribe they'd found in the Caucasus that had survived, and they were here. So it really was getting pretty manned up with Russians. But they had an American here. Yes, you want to see? He's right outside. The American was ushered in, and he was pulling a young girl behind him. He stood there grinning. It was a boy from Johnny's own village, Tom Smiley Townsend. They were very glad to see each other. Tom Smiley was a big lad, almost as big as Johnny, and a year younger. He said he had graduated from machine school and heard they didn't have enough operators over here for this job and had caught a ride, and he'd been working here for over a month, running minesweepers and teaching others and fixing things that broke down. This was his girl, Margarita.
Margarita, permite me presentarte al Gran Señor Johnny.
The girl was very pretty, very shy, and overawed. Johnny bowed. He had seen Sir Robert do that. And she bowed. Tom Smiley said they were going to get married in a few weeks. And Johnny said he hoped they had lots of children. And Margarita blushed when Tom Smiley translated it, but nodded her head with enthusiasm. For the first time, Johnny learned the village had moved. Tom Smiley had been trained so he could keep the passes open in winter using a blade scraper, and they wouldn't have the usual winter starvation, but now that they were moved, there was less snow. It was to the town Johnny had recommended, but Brown Limper had sent troops to force them to go to it. They had even had to leave their belongings behind, but he thought by now the other boys, two more were machine operators now and two were pilots, would have collected those up for them. The colonel pushed them out and gave Johnny a sip of the finest vodka ever brewed, and it almost took the top off Johnny's head. What a cure for flight fatigue. Must have been out of bear's teeth. The colonel said that was absolutely correct. How did he guess the formula? And took him outside again. Most of the people were going about their business getting ready for a big party and dance, but they smiled and smiled as they passed Johnny. Two German pilots from the African base were sitting in front of a fire, drinking something. The third pilot was upstairs flying patrol. The rumble of the motors faint due to his extreme altitude. Johnny told them, in cyclo, they should relax and enjoy themselves, and they just looked at him respectfully. Johnny knew they had completely different orders, two on alert for scramble, sleeping in their planes with the radio on, one ship always in the air. Johnny realized all this good cheer and festivity in the air was dulling his awareness of the facts of today. They were at war with powerful forces. The colonel led him to a small knoll and with an expansive hand showed him how great this country was. There was wild cotton, enough to clothe thousands. There was wild wheat and wild oats and herds of sheep and cattle enough to feed hundreds of thousands. Those ruins way over there had been a city full of factories, and although the machines didn't work with existing motors, Tom Smiley thought he could get some looms running, which made Johnny wonder whether they didn't have another Angus on their hands in Tom Smiley. Did Johnny know there was a tomb over to the southeast, way over where the Emperor of the World was buried? A Mongol named Timur-i-Leng. Nearly 2,000 years ago, he had ruled the whole world. It was a fact. He would have to take Johnny over there and show him the tomb. It said so right on it. Johnny had heard quite enough about Hitlers and Napoleons and such. He had often wondered whether, if such vermin had not been so intent on personally ruling the world, man might have had the cultural advancement to repel the Cyclo invasion. He had heard some theory that it required war to invent technology, and he thought that must be a Cyclo maxim. But he didn't tell Colonel Ivan that. He admired the truly beautiful view. "The base?" The colonel responded to Johnny's question. "It was up there, not very far away from here. He'd give him a whole tour tomorrow." As they started down, a big, jolly-looking Scot and two aides met them. It was Sir Andrew McNulty, the head of the Federation and chief of all the coordinators. He had gotten the word Johnny was here and had just flown in. He had a pleasing manner and a cheery laugh, very admired by his extensive and busy corps of coordinators. Johnny was very glad to see him, for the business he was here for involved the movement of tribes. He complimented Sir Andrew on the magnificent work the coordinators were doing, and Sir Andrew thanked him for saving the lives of that pair in Africa. Johnny knew he could get along with this man. Good. About sunset, the party was ready, and the big square box constellation in the sky was well down before it finished. Dances and music and more dances. Spanish dances. The dance of the bear hunt from Siberia. Wild leaping dances from the Caucasus. Firelight and laughter. Good food and drink. Since it seemed everyone had to clink a cup with Johnny, and since he had never done much drinking, he had quite a head the next morning when the colonel, all bustling efficiency, broke him out. After a bit of breakfast, they trooped off in a mob to see the ancient defense base. The colonel said that they had all worked on it, and they were all going along to make sure he liked it, and to straighten anything up he didn't like. They were no longer in their party clothes. They were here now to go back to work as needed. The ancient base was entered through a tunnel that was masked by overhangs. Built to resist nuclear bombing and to serve as a command post, it was deep. Due to occasional earthquakes in this area, it had been built very strong. It lacked the polish and finish of the American base, but it was even bigger. They had lighted it with Cyclo mine lamps. They had buried the vast numbers of dead with honors. They had swept everything up with Cyclo minesweepers flown in from Grozny. Tom Smiley had gotten the water lines working. The colonel said he really hadn't intended for him and his men to help so much, for this should be an American base, but they had the experience, and so they had pitched in. The amounts of stores were vast. Uniforms were not as well packaged and sealed as the American ones had been, but much of the stores were useful. Possibly the quality was even better. Look at these portable flame throwers. They still worked. 100,000 assault rifles called AK-47 had been found totally preserved, and they had retailored the ammunition with and without radiation. They presented Johnny with one that they had chrome molecular plated down at Grozny, and 5,000 rounds of guaranteed no-misfire ammunition in clips. The Russian premier had apparently never gotten here, but his command post had been ready. Johnny thought that must be a picture of him, that big one on the wall, but he was told no, that was a picture of a former czar named Lenin. Possibly in the time of Timur-i-Leng, they were not sure, but it was evidently a very respected picture, so they had left it. Level after level, passage after passage, they trooped through the vast base, stopping now and then to show Johnny things, smiling at his praise, very happy that he was pleased with it. But the main thing Johnny was happy with was the underground hangars. Here was room for thousands of planes. The very thing. Storage. exactly what he had hoped to find. They had used blade scrapers to push out the crumbled ruins that they said were MIGs and other craft. Johnny could not read the alphabet, but many of them could, and they showed him some of the labels they had salvaged before pushing the mounds of warplanes out. MIGs meant airplane in Russian, they said. The hangars had their own ports and entrances, just what Johnny wanted. They showed him the tactical nuclear and other nuclear manuals. They were all in Russian, but one old fellow from the Hindu Kush assured Johnny he could read them. There was a lot of nuclear weapons storage to the north, and they were not going near it until they got the manuals read. There were a lot of silos, too, that had powder rockets still in them, but the powder was dangerous to handle. It had gone bad, but little pieces blew up if you hit them hard with a hammer. Not very useful. They also showed him a coal mine nearby where the black rocks burned, so heating and fuel were handy. Now they were going to get a lot of these black rocks. They were going to harvest a lot of that wild wheat. They had plans. Johnny said the plans were great, and they had done so very well that they were great too. He was very, very pleased. He shook the hands of hundreds of people. It was not until dawn the following day that he could leave for Tibet. What had been intended as a 2-hour check of a base had developed into a 2-day tour. He was amazed what people could do if you let them just get at it, without a lot of government restricting them. He was wearing the new helmet when he left. The colonel saw to that. Buckled down, too. The colonel didn't care if he couldn't hear. Motors were bad for the ears, and at high altitudes, his ears would get cold. Johnny laughed at him, but he wore it.